From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, a Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council. Honored today to be sitting in for Tony, and I want to thank you for making Washington Watch part of your day as well. We've got a tremendous program lined up for you today. Let me kind of hit on some of the headlines. Of course, Congress moved closer to averting a partial government shutdown with the release of a morning release, if you will, a six-bill minibus spending package. I'll be joined here in just a few moments by Congressman Kevin Hern to discuss that, as well as yesterday's release of the Republican Study Committee's fiscal 2025 budget proposal titled Fiscal Sanity to Save America. You don't want to miss that. Meanwhile, attorneys general across America are weighing in on the case that's headed to the U.S. Supreme Court regarding whether sitting presidents can be prosecuted for official actions conducted while being in office. Well, one of those AGs, Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, will join me later in the program to discuss that important issue. And you may remember how Google, back in 2019, targeted Democratic presidential hopeful Tulsi Gabbard and effectively totally censored her, disabling Gabbard's ads accounts just as she was becoming the most searched candidate following the first Democratic Party primary debate.
In the first debate, I was on the first night, and I was the most searched candidate of that event. Unfortunately, Google chose to arbitrarily block our Google Ads account for several hours at the time that was most critical for our campaign.
Well, it was bad enough then when it happened. Of course, that was Tulsi Gabbard speaking with Fox's Shannon Bream back in 2019. But there is much more that's been uncovered. The Media Research Council released a special report this week showing how Google, over the past 16 years, has been utilizing their power to help push electoral victory to the most liberal candidates while targeting their opponents for censorship. Well, Media Research Center's Dan Snyder will be joining me to discuss that and what their team found out. And yesterday, Democrats in the Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing trying to convince Americans that Republicans are the extreme ones on the issue of abortion. But as Republican Senator Ted Cruz pointed out, it's really the Democrats who are the extreme ones.
The position of today's elected Democrats in Congress on abortion is wildly out of step with the American people. The position of the Democrats is not a mainstream position. Indeed, national polling shows roughly 9% of Americans agree with that position. 91% of Americans disagree with the position of every single elected Democrat in this body.
Wow. Well, Mary Zock, director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council, will be joining me to talk about yesterday's hearing and what else it says about the Democratic Party. So we've got a lot coming your way today. And, of course, the website is TonyPerkins.com. There's a lot of resources there for you, including notes on today's program, as well as archives of previous programs. So be sure to check that out. And then also, before we get started, I want to invite you to join us with our Stand With Israel prayer campaign, as we are supporting Israel and we're calling for America to repent for failing to stand with Israel. This is a time that demands all of us to jump on board and to pray and to get involved. So to join us in Standing With Israel, you can do so by texting the word Israel to 67742. Again, that's Israel to 67742. All right, now for today's program. Early in the morning, in fact, somewhere in the ballpark of 2 o'clock in the morning this morning, House and Senate leaders released the six-bill minibus spending package. And, of course, it set off a mad scramble to try to get a floor vote and both in the House and the Senate before midnight tomorrow night to avoid a partial government shutdown. Well, joining me now to discuss all of this and more is Congressman Kevin Hern, who is the chairman of the Republican Study Committee and a member of the House Ways and Means Committee. He serves the 1st Congressional District of Oklahoma. Congressman Hern, always great to have you on the program. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Jody. Good to see you.
All right. This bill comes out early, the wee hours of the morning, over 1,000 pages to try to sort through. So I know there's no way you've had time to go through it all, but at least some of your initial thoughts. What's in this thing? What are your thoughts about it?
Well, certainly, we've had indications, obviously, being in some of the leadership meetings, we know what's been coming down. And so, there's obviously, we had to wait on CBO to get some scoring out to make sure that all the numbers were in the right place. But, the people of the 1st District of Oklahoma sent me to Congress in 2018 to bend the spending curve, to get our fiscal house in order. I've talked about this, the budget that the REC puts out every single year balances. This is this appropriations package is contrary to that. We looked at in our budget of sealing the border, getting immigration under control. This appropriations package does not do that. It spends a little bit of money on beds, but that's about it. There's still a mandate out there that ICE can release people, and adding some 10,000 beds is not going to change anything. So I don't see anything in here that's going to convince me that I need to be voting yes on that. And so we'll see where it goes on the vote tomorrow, the vote that goes today, and see where that happens.
Well, and I do want to get to the RSC budget. I'm glad you brought that up because that's always a great budget, and I'd like to get some of the details of what's in there for 2025. But, Congressman, this has to be extremely frustrating. I know it was for me when I was there serving with you, where we have yet again an example that has come to be famous for Nancy Pelosi's statement of this is yet another bill that let's pass it to find out what's in it. And that is certainly no way to run a country, is no way to spend more and more money. What are you hearing from some of your colleagues about this? Are people getting frustrated and tired of this type of procedure that continues to happen over and over?
Well, certainly. It's been going this way since 2000, roughly, since the budget and appropriation has been done on time and the Senate has done their job and we funded the government on time. I've not even actually voted on a single budget on the floor of the House since I've been in Congress for 6 years. Now, think about that for a second. And both Democrats and Republicans have talked about getting back to regular order, getting our fiscal house in order, and we've not even voted on a budget out of the budget committee on the floor of the House. And so, how can you get spending under control if you don't even know what you're going to budget it on? Like every person in our district, across the state of Oklahoma, across the country, continues to ask that. How can you get spending under control if you don't even have a budget? These are simple things that you and I both know. Being in Congress, me in Congress, and it's very frustrating to say that we're going to do something when we get the majority, but we're just not doing it.
Well, so how do you see this playing out? At the end of the day, this thing comes to the floor. It's coming. What do you anticipate is going to happen?
It's about 11 o'clock on Friday morning. We're going to vote on it, and we're going to beat the deadline so there will be no government shutdown. The Senate's probably going to vote on it around midnight so that avert any shutdown. Of course, it would be over the weekend. We're not on a military payday, so there's nobody going to feel the brunt of this. And, we'll be funding the government at roughly $1.66 trillion. And we'll move on down the road. We're seeing, $2 trillion deficits on the horizon, $1 trillion plus interest on the debt next year. Which will be more than we're spending on our military, and that will be the second highest mandatory spending item, meaning interest on our debt, only second to Social Security. It will have passed Medicare, and so we're quickly going to a place of insolvency. If not for the ability to print money, we would be bankrupt a long time ago. And it's just not, you mentioned, it's not a way to run a country. It sends messages to places like China that we can't even, we look inward and we're complaining about the rest of the world and we can't even run our own house.
Yeah, it's frightening. And now I'm hearing reports that we're going spending an additional $1 trillion about every 3 or 4 months. It's frightful where this thing is coming, and the brakes have to be put on. And speaking of those brakes, the Republican Study Committee, which you are the chairman of, released their budget yesterday. I love the title of it, Fiscal Sanity to Save America. I mean, that is spot on. So tell us a little bit about that budget and what's in it.
Well, it balances in 7 years. It is a pathway to a balanced budget that we have done now for certainly my 4 years, 2 years as the chair of the Budget and Spending Task Force, and now 2 years as chairman of the RSC. It's a pathway, not the only one, but as I've said, show me another way. Let's debate, you know, how we get to a balanced budget. Contrast that with Joe Biden's budget that just came out. It never balances. We cut trillions of dollars in taxes for American people. Contrast that to Joe Biden, who spends, you know, raises taxes by $5 trillion. We secure the southern border versus a border that's wide open in Joe Biden's budget. We look at energy security versus, you know, this radical green climate agenda that he has. And it's the most pro-life, most pro-family budget that we've ever put out. And so this does all the things to, again, as the title says, restore fiscal sanity to America. And you can't just talk about it. You have to put a roadmap out. And we've done that. And we're anxiously hoping we'll get a chance to vote on a budget so that we can put this as an alternate budget. And I would argue that we should all, as members of Congress, vote on Joe Biden's budget to see where the Congress is really at versus, you know, fiscal sanity versus something that's completely opposite of that in what you see in the president's budget.
That's a good idea. I'd love to see that as well. I think the majority of Americans would love to see those votes. You know, I was looking earlier today, just scanning over some of the things in the RSC budget, and it didn't take long to see where the White House is already attacking it. Specifically, the thing that jumped out at me is how they're going after Social Security, saying that you and the Republicans are going after Social Security. What's your response to that?
Well, I said this last year when the White House, you know, went directly after me. They were asking a press conference at the White House, and the White House responded. Corinne Jean-Pierre responded with some diatribe. And then the last two sentences were, you know, I think were the hallmark of the budget. And she said, this budget will undo all the great work that Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, has done in the last 2.5 years. I think that is a testament to what this budget does. It balances. And again, I'm anxiously waiting to see their response on the entire budget. Last year, the press, you know, obviously came after me about Social Security and Medicare, and I stopped them all. And I will say that again to them, as I did in the press conference this morning. Show me one place in this budget that we're being irresponsible. We're trying to save Social Security, save Medicare. Everybody that's not in an elected position says it has to be done. Every institution, whether it's left-leaning, moderate, or right-leaning, says that the Social Security and Medicare are going to be up for cuts of, you know, 15 to 21% over the next 7 years. We have got to do this because doing nothing is what is radical.
Well, Congressman Kevin Hearn, thank you so much for the incredible work and leadership that you exhibit there on Capitol Hill. We're deeply grateful, and thank you for taking time to out of your busy schedule to join us here on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody. I really appreciate it.
All right. Friends, we need to be praying for them. All our congressmen have a lot on their shoulders right now. All right, coming up, can presidents be prosecuted for official actions conducted while being in office? That's the question that's on the way to the Supreme Court, and we'll be addressing it with one of the attorney generals that's involved in this. So he'll be joining us right after the break. Don't go anywhere. Much more coming your way straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you. I'm your host today, Jody Heiss, sitting in for Tony. And thank you so much for joining us. All right, this week, the attorneys general of nearly half the states in America weighed in on an extremely important case that's actually headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. It regards whether sitting presidents can be prosecuted for official actions that are conducted while in office. Well, just yesterday, about 18 states filed an amicus brief in Trump v. the United States. And this comes just one day after Alaska, Ohio, and Wyoming likewise filed an amicus brief in the case that's going to be heard by the Supreme Court next month. So why is this such a significant case, which it is? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost. General Yost, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always an honor to have you.
Thank you.
All right, so let's begin with this. There's probably some who are watching or listening right now who may not be familiar with this case. So give us a little bit of background and why this is such an important issue.
Well, this is about the case that has been brought against former President Trump by Special Counsel Jack Smith. The president raised a defense of immunity in the trial court. The trial judge said, no, you're not immune, and he appealed, and then appealed the judgment of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So here we are on an emergency appeal to the United States Supreme Court, arguing about whether a president taking actions related to his office during his time in office is could be criminally prosecuted for that. As we'll see in our conversation, there's some real problems with asserting that the president is just like a common person on the street.
Yeah, and a matter of fact, that's why the Constitution gives one provision for that. It's called impeachment. if there's problems while in office. But this is a whole nother level that we're going to what you're describing here. So tell us what you and your counterparts are arguing here.
So we're on the other side of Jack Smith. We take slightly different legal approaches to it, but we both argue that the president has vast immunity for actions that he takes while in office. I mean, think about it. If every time you have to make a decision in the Oval Office, you have to get an army of lawyers together and debate it endlessly, the moment is going to pass. My brief with the other two states argue particularly that you should look to how close is this to an Article II presidential power, and how urgent are the circumstances to determine what kind of the outer limits of that immunity would be.
I think that is an excellent point and gives a little bit of an understanding, I think, for people to see the gravity of this. If a president is in a situation where every single move they make potentially is going to face a criminal charge, which in this political environment these days, that's not out of the question at all, then it can really paralyze the president from doing the job that he's there to do. So another question that I'm hearing, an issue, probably a better way of saying it, is the timing of all of this, that it looks as though there's a political motivation. I'll just put it out there that the timing of this whole prosecution is politically motivated. How does that play into this whole issue, do you think?
Well, I think it's an important consideration. I mean, the fact of the matter is this is on an emergency pretrial appeal. That's very unusual. Most cases go up to the Supreme Court after the trial court's already done and the appeals court gets to review everything. And then if it even gets to the Supreme Court, and you know, maybe 50 cases a year are all we're talking about, then they hear it. Well, we haven't even impaneled a jury here, and the Supreme Court's hearing it. Well, why is that? In significant part because Jack Smith is pushing for a quick resolution to this case. In addition, he waited a long time. This case wasn't indicted for several years after the occurrence of very public events that were in the indictment. And a lot of folks are scratching their head and saying, well, wait a second. Why all the rush now? Why didn't you bring this in 2021 or 2022? So there's a fair question there, but that also illustrates why this is so important. Up till now, presidents have never gotten prosecuted. And I mean, if you think about the Andrew Jackson, the Indian Removal Act, and the Trail of Tears, nobody remotely talked about the idea that his actions, which if they had been undertaken by a criminal or by an individual, might have been criminal. Nobody ever prosecuted that. Or even talked about it, or FDR ordered all the Japanese Americans rounded up and put into internment camps during World War II. Nobody dreamed that he could be constitutionally liable for that act, even though I think today most of us would look and say, you know, that was a terrible thing to do to fellow citizens and violated their constitutional rights. If an individual person had done it, that would have been kidnapping and false imprisonment, and you could have been prosecuted for it. But nobody talked about prosecuting presidents in this kind of a way until Jack Smith and until Donald Trump. Well, like Goethe said about the Sorcerer's Apprentice, the spirits he has summoned he cannot now contain.
Wow. Well, Attorney General, I wish we had more time to talk. Unfortunately, we have run out of time in this segment. We'd love to be able to get you back and go further into this because it is a huge issue. and it's going to the Supreme Court right now. Attorney General Dave Yost, Ohio, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today on Washington Watch.
Glad to talk to you. Thank you.
All right, friends, it's no secret that Google has had an enormous influence on America, but they have also had an enormous influence on elections. But to what extent and in what way? We talk with Media Research Center about that after the break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you joining us today. I'm your host, Jody High, sitting in today for Tony, an honor to be doing so. All right, for those of you who are regular watchers of Washington Watch, you know that every week since the start of the primary election season, we've tried to feature on Washington Watch a segment that highlights news and issues related to election integrity. By the way, many of you are aware that I have a book coming out in the first week in April on this very issue. It's entitled Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. Looking forward to that coming out and hope that you'll go ahead and be ready to get your copy of it. I don't know that there's much more that's more important coming into an election cycle than election integrity. Well, this week, the Media Research Center released a special report on what their researchers found when they dug into Google's influence on American elections. And the report shows how Google, over the past 16 years, has utilized its power to help push to election victories some of the most liberal candidates imaginable while targeting their opponents for censorship. As part of our ongoing series looking into election integrity initiatives during this election year, I've invited Dan Schneider from MRC to discuss their findings. And many of you are very familiar with both with Dan and the Media Research Center. Dan currently serves as Vice President of Free Speech America, MRC Business, and the External Affairs Division at the Media Research Center. And his work in government is extensive. He's included roles in the White House, the executive branch, the U.S. Senate, as well as the U.S. House of Representatives. So, Dan, thank you so much for joining me today. It's an honor to have you.
Well, look, you've been one of my favorite members of Congress for a long time. It's great to be on the show with you.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind. And your check's in the mail, trust me. listen, I am so grateful for the research that you all have done. Your researchers have found some 41 times that Google has interfered with elections over the last 16 years. Can you let's start by just giving us some examples of what you found.
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes their efforts have been subtle and behind the scenes. Sometimes it's been more overt. But one of the really dangerous things about Google is how it does it, all of this censorship behind the wall within its dark, you know, box of algorithms. When Facebook or Twitter has deplatformed people, it's been obvious to others. But Google is far more effective at doing this, you know, in secret ways. So, for example, in before the last four Republican presidential campaign debates, we did two searches before each of these debates. One search was for Democrat presidential campaign websites, and the other was for Republican presidential campaign websites. And as you would expect, when we did a search for Democrat websites, Joe Biden's campaign website was the very first search result. Marianne Williamson's search result was pretty high, too. But Google buried RFK Jr.'s website entirely, couldn't find it through Google. Even more surprising was what happened when we looked for Republican presidential campaign websites. Google returned only two results. One, again, was for Marianne Williamson, a Democrat, and the other was for the one guy polling at 0% in the polls, Will Hurd. Google did not produce a campaign website for Donald Trump, for Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, or any other Republican. And this was consistent for months before each of these debates. And this is how Google operates. It withholds information from the public that is valuable. It promotes information that is bad for Republicans, good for Democrats, or in some cases, when it's a Democrat who opposes their candidate of choice, you know, like RFK Jr.
Well, and what's so even more surprising, I mean, that's shocking. That's maddening. But when you consider on top of it, the impact that Google has absolutely surged in recent years. So really, they are able, through this kind of power, to sway elections. Is that proper to think about?
Absolutely. In the last election, a researcher named Dr. Robert Epstein has documented that he thinks that Google swayed anywhere from 6 to 8 million votes for Joe Biden. And then it's not just on elections. It's also on policy issues like elections. In Google News, Google links to 97% of their links on elections links to liberal sites, 0% to conservative sites.
Unbelievable.
And other cultural issues, Google sways it hard to the left as well.
Dan, we've only got about a minute or so left. A fascinating discussion. But what can be done to counter this?
Well, first of all, people should try to avoid using Google at all. There's a search engine that's run to be neutral called Tusk. That's a good alternative to Google. But if you have to use Google, just know that if you really want information that's valid and good, you're probably going to have to go to the second or third or fourth page of search results. There are several state attorneys general who are fighting. There are certain members of Congress who are doing good oversight hearings. But this is a long battle that we've got to win.
Well, I absolutely cannot say thank you enough, Dan, to you and all the researchers at MRC. Well done. This is information that needs to get out, and we'll do what we can to help you. Dan Schneider, Vice President, MRC, Free Speech America, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thanks, Congressman.
All right, friends, stay tuned. After the break, we're going to be looking into the left's push for abortion. And in that process, we're going to set the record straight on the false narratives that they are feeding the American people, the American public. They want you to think that you are the extremist for believing in life. You don't want to miss what's coming your way. We'll get all into it right after the break, so don't go away. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony, and glad to have you on board with us. All right, before we dive into this next segment, I want to just issue yet another call to the men of greater New York and New Jersey, the metro area. I want to urge you to join Tony, General Boykin, and a host of other speakers this Saturday at the Stand Courageous Men's Conference. It's going to be held at the Liquid Church in Parsippany, New Jersey. Look, this is going to be an incredible day, a day of hope, a day of awakening, a day of healing for men, all men who are seeking to be all that God created them to be. I know just today, coming into the studio, coming in on Uber, I got in a conversation about this with my Uber driver, and he could not thank me enough for FRC and all those involved in Stand Courageous for stepping up for men. So I urge you, those of you in the New York, New Jersey area, come join us. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com, standcourageous.com. We hope to see you there on Saturday. All right, yesterday, Democrats in the Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing. And catch this title, by the way. The name of their hearing was The Continued Assault on Reproductive Freedoms in a Post-Dobbs America. It's an assault. And while Senate Democrats were hoping somehow to convince the American people that Republicans are extreme on the issue of abortion and life, they only showed yet again that they are the ones who are extreme, as they are wholeheartedly in support of abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy on demand, no questions asked.
The position of today's elected Democrats in Congress on abortion is wildly out of step with the American people. The position of the Democrats is not a mainstream position. Indeed, national polling shows roughly 9% of Americans agree with that position. 91% of Americans disagree with the position of every single elected Democrat in this body.
Wow. Of course, that was Senator Ted Cruz of Texas at the hearing yesterday. So what else came out at the hearing? Well, here to discuss this and more is Mary Zock. She's the director of at the Center of Human Dignity here at FRC. Mary, thank you so much for joining us again on Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Great to see you, too, Jody.
All right. So what do you make of the Democrats describing the wake of the Dobbs decision as an assault? This is an assault.
Yeah, it's really ironic that Democrats use violent terms to describe protecting unborn children when we know that abortion brutally and callously ends the life of an unborn child. Democrats are extreme on this because they believe that it is fine to kill an innocent human being up until the moment of birth. And even Democrats haven't even voted to pass legislation protecting a child after that child is born. So we can see that the ones who are committing the assault, an actual assault on a human being, here are in fact Democrats.
Yeah, well said. Well said. I think that hits the nail on the head. And, you know, Democrats unquestionably, clearly are the extreme ones on this issue. In fact, I want to play a clip here for you and get your reaction. But this is a clip with Senator Kennedy, John Kennedy. And he pointed out how one of the organizations of one of the Democrat witnesses there on their website, it points out that they support abortion at all points of gestation. And so Kennedy jumped in here with this question. Let's show this clip and I'd like to get your response.
If a healthy mother with a healthy baby wanted to have an abortion the day before birth, would it be okay with you?
Senator, that is not how abortion care works and is really dangerous. That rhetoric is really dangerous for the people who are—
It would be okay with you, wouldn't it?
That is called labor and delivery, sir.
It would be okay with you,
wouldn't it? That is called labor and delivery, sir.
Wow. So what do you make of that exchange, Mary?
Well, it's very interesting that none of the witnesses were willing to come out and say, no, I would not support abortion the day before a healthy mother with a healthy baby is due to deliver. And all of them said the same thing. Both of them said the same thing. They said, that's not how abortion works. Well, I would love for them to describe for the American people how abortion does work, because how it works is it tears apart an unborn child, a defenseless, innocent, unborn child. And that's what the American people need to know about the Democrat position. They could not refute the fact that they support abortion of a healthy baby with a healthy mother the day before that woman is due.
Yeah, and the question was not, what is that last day called? He was not asking, is it called labor and delivery? He was asking, would you support the abortion of that baby one day beforehand? And they, like you brought up, they did not refuse. They refused to answer the question and just say, oh, that's called labor and delivery. Well, that was not the question. And they refused to answer what you were saying here and many others, that they absolutely support abortion all the way up to the point of birth. Now, as we all know, the Democrats have many allies, pro-abortion allies, but one of those is the Guttmacher Institute. And the legacy media is thrilled, frankly, to be reporting recently a report from the Guttmacher where they are bragging that there were more than 1 million abortions in 2023. That is the highest number of abortions in over a decade, a 10% jump over 2020. And it just seems unthinkable to me that they are thrilled, elated, celebrating the fact that abortions are up. What are your thoughts on this Guttmacher report?
I think for too long, we have allowed people to hide behind the what has become a euphemism, and that is abortion. Abortion, people don't actually think of what that actually is. It's the brutal ending of a human being's life. And imagine if we had headlines that were celebrating the death of the increased number of deaths through the brutal murder of unborn children. Imagine if we had headlines celebrating that. Americans would be outraged. But because we use the term abortion, people Democrats are able to get away with this. They're able to act as if this is a positive thing. Nothing about abortion is good. And certainly we need to work at fixing the circumstances that have led over a million women to think that this was their solution. But we also have to call abortion what it is. And we can't let Democrats act like this is some fix-all to the problems of the world.
Yeah, we can't let them act as though this is a fix-all, nor can we allow them to point the finger at us who support life and have them say, we're extreme. Since when has death not been considered an extreme position? And yet, somehow, those of us who stand for life these days in this political environment are looked upon as the extremist. The Washington Times came out, speaking of this whole Guttmacher Institute report and all that they're coming out with. Also, and I'd love to get your response to this, they are the big fear these days is the shift from procedural medical abortions, as bad as that is, to now the use of abortion pills. This is, Guttmacher reported that now over two-thirds of abortions are taking place by the pill, where women are taking these at home, which brings severe risk of health to their own lives, as well as ending the life of the baby. What is your take on the drastic increase of the use of abortion pills, in spite of the fact that many states have restrictions on these pills, are still going around all these restrictions? It looks like just an enormous mess that's being created, both physically and legally.
It really is an enormous mess, and there's so many things to address here. First off, we know that every single abortion is tragic because every abortion ends the life of an unborn child. But the use of the abortion drug is especially egregious because we know that the abortion drug is four times as dangerous as surgical abortion for the mother. And so we have women who are receiving this abortion drug, mifepristone, through the mail, and they're taking this drug alone in their bathroom, and then they're hemorrhaging, and then they have uncontrolled bleeding where they don't know, is it too much or is this natural? They don't know what is about to happen to their body because they're not doctors. They weren't supposed to know. We have women who have ectopic pregnancies that go undiagnosed, and then those women have serious complications because of it, or women who never received a Rogam shot, and then their future pregnancies are in jeopardy because no abortionist saw them in person to tell them, hey, you actually need this. So we have the abortion industry putting women's lives at risk, all so that they can make more money. And that's exactly what they're doing with the abortion drug. They're shipping it across state lines to pro-life states, and in direct violation of those states' rights to protect unborn children. And they're doing all of this just to make more money.
So money is the driving force behind those pushing the pill, I suppose. And that makes sense. I mean, typically for these type of issues, you always follow the money trail and you find it there. What do you attribute, though, the drastic increase in abortions, generally speaking? I mean, we know mifepristone has been more or less approved since early 2000s, but is the increase from the Biden administration's looser restrictions on abortion, they're pushing for abortion? What is the driving force behind the spike that we're watching?
I think it's hard to say exactly what it is. I think it's a number of factors that all go together. We have pro-abortion states that are pushing abortion on women that are telling women abortion is your only solution. We have a culture where men are not taking responsibility for their actions, and there's not a willingness to stand up and stand with the mother of their unborn child and defend that life. And we have the chemical abortion drug that the abortion industry says is just as easy as taking a Tylenol. It's not. It's very different from a Tylenol. You have a significantly increased chance of entering the emergency room, which is not something that someone who takes a Tylenol has. And we know that the abortion industry tells women it will just be like a heavy period. It will be natural. And then we know countless women end up delivering their unborn baby that's clearly recognizable as a baby into the toilet. And their hearts are broken forever because they didn't realize that was what was about to happen. This increase is tragic, and we really can't state that enough.
Wow. Well, you know, there's never a bad time, Mary, to remind our audience of the dangers of the abortion pill. You spoke to some of them just now. What are some of the other dangers, serious health risks involved with the abortion pill?
Well, we know that there's an increased risk of an ectopic pregnancy going undiagnosed, an increased risk of hemorrhage, of retained fetal parts. The further along in a woman's pregnancy that she is, the higher likelihood that part of her baby, part of the placenta or the tissue that's there, won't exit her body with the abortion drug use. So we know there is that danger, but we also can't forget about the likelihood of intimate partner violence with the use of the abortion drug. There's a story, a tragic story that just occurred, the hearing for just occurred in Texas, where a mother, a wife, found out she was pregnant, and her husband began to try to kill their unborn child with the abortion drug by putting this substance in her drinking water. And thankfully, this mother was courageous and brave in defending her unborn baby, and she protected that child's life. But that's just one instance. And how many traffickers? We have a huge issue at the border. How many traffickers are using the abortion drug? How many women who are in abusive situations have their abuser using that abortion drug? Those are things that we don't know the answer to, but we know that it is very, very easy for an abuser to do.
Well, we've only got a little over a minute or so left here, Mary, but I know Senator Duckworth has a bill that's being known as the IVF bill. Can you speak to that a little bit about what this bill really is doing?
Yeah, calling this the IVF bill, that's just Senator Duckworth taking advantage of a moment in political history where the Alabama Supreme Court called embryos human beings and persons, which they are. But what this bill really does is it would legalize the experimentation to create three-parent embryos. It would legalize chimeras, human cloning. These are the things that the American people do not want, that the left is taking this opportunity and saying, well, hey, this is just about IVF. It's not about IVF. It's about cloning. It's about chimeras. It's about three-parent embryos and designer babies.
Well, thank you so much, Mary Zock. You do a spectacular job keeping us informed as to what's taking place in this whole battle for life. And the work that you do as director of the Center of Human Dignity here at FRC, we are grateful deeply. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, friends, I want to encourage you to reach out to your senator. You can do so by texting the word unborn to 67742, unborn to 67742, and urge them to oppose Senator Duckworth's so-called IVF bill. All right, that wraps up our program for today. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep the torch ablaze, my friends, and we look forward to having you again tomorrow on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.